afternoon, listeners. This is the DOGS program, the Australian Council for Defence of Government Schools, and we're here every Saturday. And this is a very special Saturday, not just because we've got a new premier in Victoria, but because the teachers went on strike. And that's what we're going to talk about today. We're very lucky, very, very fortunate here at 3CR that there's a clever lady and a very a committed lady called Annie McLaughlin, who went to the teachers' strike and talked to them. So let's hear from the teachers themselves at their strike, shall we?
We're here to send a message to government that it's time to fully fund our schools, that it's time to put a decent offer to teachers, because the problems the profession is facing, the staff shortages, the pressure that staff are facing in schools, the exhaustion, the burnout, it's meaning that our students aren't being able to achieve their best, and ultimately that's what it's all about and that's what we want. I think we need to have an EBA and a funding system that meets the needs of students and meets the needs of teachers. Members obviously felt the last offer didn't do that. I trust their judgment. And my hope is that our action today will encourage the government to see sense and to put something in place, both a funding model and an EBA that genuinely meets the needs of teachers, ES, school leaders and students. I think we are stronger together, both as individuals in our workplaces, as sub-branches and as a union. And today is both a celebration of that and a demonstration of our resolve that we should have a funding model that works and an EBA that meets the needs of staff, students and meets the expectations of the broader community in terms of what they want their public schools to look like.
I'm here because it's an unprecedented situation where a state Labor government has decided to go around our union. So for me, it's more about protest or lack of protest, what I believe to be doffing of the hat process with a Labor government. So while the conditions themselves aren't really good in terms of school funding, how dare a Labor government, go around our union to set up my conditions? We all received a vote that didn't go through negotiation with our union executive. We received a vote in our email. That was everybody, unionist and non-unionist. No problem with that. But they excluded the union executive from that discussion with that latest set of conditions. Absolutely. And that has, in my memory, never been done before. And I've been through Kennett the whole lot. So that, to me, is a breach of confidence and trust with how a state Labor government should operate.
It's up to Ben Carroll. The ball is in his court. He can make us a deal by July 30 that satisfies our core demands, that gives us the wages and the conditions we need to solve the crisis in our schools. But if he fails to, we will be out on strike on August 4 and potentially again beyond that. We won't hesitate to come out again.
We're here to try and get fully funded schools, so it's not just about... We hear a lot about the pay rise for teachers. It's not about the pay rise. This is not why we're here. It is about getting the resources for our schools to be able to give our kids the best education we can, which is currently what the Allan government is not doing. In the media, we hear a lot about the teacher pay and about how the teachers have rejected a pay offer. But what they're not telling you is in those offers that were given, there was nothing about giving additional funding to schools to supply the kids. Absolutely nothing. So, and that's why we're out here today, because it's really important that we have the resources to be able to give our kids. So I work in a school. I can tell you that we've had staff with broken arms that have been suffered from students. We have limited ES staff. It would be amazing to be able to have extra resources, to have extra staff to be able to assist with these kids. And that's ultimately what it is. We hear that, you know, Victoria's an education state, but we are failing by not providing resources for these kids. The kids can't learn. Really, we need improvements in school funding. That's ultimately what we need. Why is the public supporting private schools? They're private schools. Public education is to give a free education to all Victorian students. So why are we funding private schools? Shouldn't our public education system be just as good, if not better, than a private school? Let's get some more funding for public education. That would be great.
Each one one of us knows in our individual lives that we are living a crisis. We know that we can't sustain the job. It's really eroding our standard of living, and it's not good enough for our kids. But when we strike and when we're on the streets together, when we see ourselves en masse, and when we also see the support that we have from the community, it strengthens our resolve and it sends a message to Ben Carroll that we're not going to cop it.
I'm new to the teaching profession in the last 3 years, and I'm shocked at how much teachers are expected to work unpaid voluntarily. But there comes a time, throwing money at the problem isn't the answer. People want their lives back, and it's time to get some balance back in. So first things first, government offering 4 years smells of they want to stitch us up next time. 3 years is a better deal, it shows commitment to the long term. That and the fact that all they're doing is putting money on the table, not actually looking seriously at our working hours and our unpaid hours, and cutting meetings by half. We're still at school, it doesn't save us anything. We need real time back in our lives and so do our families. We would encourage the negotiators to come and actually spend a day in our schools and our classrooms and then go back to the negotiating table. Just step into our lives for a moment, see the burdens we carry, see the work we put in for our students, inside and outside hours, and then have another think about our worth and the value we're bringing to community.
It's up to Ben Carroll. The ball is in his court. He can make us a deal by July 30 that satisfies our core demands, that gives us the wages and the conditions we need to solve the crisis in our schools. But if he fails to, we will be out on strike on August 4 and potentially again beyond that. We won't hesitate to come out again.
I'm here today because I would like better conditions at work. In terms of class sizes, reduction in workload, it's just overwhelming all the time. I have friends in high school, in other schools around the state, and it's the same thing. I'm burnt out. I'm 40 and I'm ready to give up. I don't know how long I can do this for. I just would like to be appreciated, like to be shown appreciation. People say, oh, it's all about the money. It's obviously not about the money because we're here. It's obviously not about the money. You know, like I'm at the top of the scale. It's a significant improvement, but if it was about the money, everyone would have said yes.
The union leadership needs to actually advocate strongly on behalf of the members for our actual demands. It can't concede on that. And what I hear from our union leadership is too much concession about that, agreeing with the government that it's too hard. It's not too hard. What's too hard is a class of 29 students. That's too hard. We need a hard cap on class sizes and a staged reduction over the life of the agreement down to 20 kids per class, which is the gold standard. We need a pay rise of 35% over 3 years, backdated to January. We need face-to-face teaching reductions and education support staff paid lunch break, and descriptions, not dimensions, for education support staff. I would say to parents, thank you for your solidarity. I know that you know we are fighting for the schools that your kids deserve. We care about your kids so much. That's why we have so much resolve. We can't stand working in schools where we can't do the job that we want to do. So I know that you're with us and we're going to keep fighting together.
Teachers need to be valued, principals need to be valued, education support staff need to be valued, and the government needs to start to listen to us and value us.
Well, thank you very much, Annie McLaughlin from Solidarity Breakfast. If you want to hear more of the teachers on Solidarity Breakfast, then you can go to the 3CR website and their podcast, Solidarity Breakfast. But we've now got Andy, who's been doing some work on why the Victorian teachers rejected the union government contract in the first place. This strike has happened largely because a group of members, union members, grassroots members who are in the actual classroom know what's going on and are not going to just be yay-sayers to union bosses and Labor Party apparatchiks. But I don't want to sound too negative, of course, but that's really the way this world works, unfortunately. And a lot of parents and supporters of public education are right behind these teachers.
Thanks, Jean. Why Victorian teachers rejected the union government contract? And this article was published in A Red Flag. School staff cannot bear the burden of the broken public school system any longer. Our paltry pay and unbearable workloads deserve to be front page news and a political crisis for the government. And in Victoria, right now, they are. This is thanks to an internal union rebellion in which the group Socialists in Schools played a crucial role. Last week, 58% of Australian Education Union members in Victoria made history. Going against our union leaders' advice, tens of thousands of school staff voted down an in-principle agreement the union had reached with the state Labor government. The rejection is historic. The first statewide agreement reached between the left-wing teachers' union, the Victorian Secondary Teachers Association, was in 1982. Since then, rebellious school staff have never been organised or confident enough to win a majority of their workmates to vote against their own union leaders' advice, to reject an agreement and demand more. Until now. There are many reasons for the no vote. The disastrous 2022 agreement, which union leaders rammed through during the pandemic, resulted in an 11% pay cut. There is a lot of catching up to do, and the latest proposed agreement would not get us there. While the media was fixated on talking up the offer, for most teachers in the middle years of their career, the agreement was not close enough to the 35% pay increase over 3 years that we voted to fight for at the beginning of the campaign. It's also unclear whether the proposed pay deal would keep us ahead of current and recent inflation. We simply can't afford another union sellout. The question of solidarity with education support staff was also key to convincing people to vote no. ES staff perform essential work in schools, and the pay rise they were offered was lower than the percentage pay rise teachers were to receive. Rather than base salary increases, much of the pay rise for ES came in the weaker form of bonuses. It's important to remember just how low paid ES staff are. Range 2-1, entry level for the most common band, is currently $56,580, which works out to just $28.54 per hour. Most classroom support ES get paid for only 6 hours per day and work through their unpaid 30-minute lunch break. So entry level ES get paid just $846 for a 5-day week. Even the top of range, 2-8, working those same hours are paid only $1,096.50 per week before tax. And yes, this is the top pay for most classroom support ES. As the union leaders themselves argue, we are stronger together, and 58% of us demonstrated this by rejecting a deal that would have left ES base pay even further behind teachers, and thus drive another wedge between us. Finally, the offer did nothing to address our impossible workloads, which are pushing 38 teachers per week to leave the profession, or the state, to teach elsewhere. Recent research has indicated that less than 1 in 3 mid-career teachers plan to stay in the profession until retirement. In response to the union leaders' fear-mongering that rejecting the deal would lead to an intractable campaign and a worse offer, Socialists in Schools activists cited the example of Victorian nurses who voted down an offer that their leadership had endorsed in 2024. Australian Nursing and Midwifery Federation officials were completely unprepared for the anger and confidence of nurses to speak up against their proposed deal at a mass meeting. At the time, rather than hear out their members, Union Secretary Lisa Fitzpatrick condescendingly told nurses that they clearly hadn't been able to grasp the wage deal. In reality, members understood perfectly that they were being ripped off. They stood their ground, voted no, and received an improved offer merely a month later. The AEU leaders similarly disregard their own members' opinions. They ignored motions from 54 schools and 6 regions to escalate our campaign with more industrial action. Instead, they implemented largely toothless work bans and cancelled the half-day regional strikes they organised. Those strikes were themselves a de-escalation from our previous statewide 24-hour stop work, despite being dishonestly branded as an escalation. Going above and beyond, the union leaders also deleted critical social media comments and banned dissenting union members from the union's channels. The union presented us with a lowball offer, presumably out of deference to the Labor government. This is a government that talked enthusiastically about essential workers during the pandemic, but has deliberately let our wages fall far behind inflation, and has constantly skimmed funding from public schools, leading to the crisis we see today. How dare our unions accept these insulting offers from one of the best-funded employers, and one that we are well placed to put under serious pressure? Interestingly, following the vote, our officials tried a different tack. Speaking to the media, a red-faced Justin Mullaly, the union president, initially tried to distance himself from the offer and claimed that he and the union had not endorsed or recommended the deal to its members. Mullaly stated that the union's supposedly democratic decision-making body, the Branch Council, was responsible. But the Branch Council was elected in 2024, well before the campaign started, and is largely made up of members allied with the leadership and who follow their lead. And Mullaly's statement that the union hadn't recommended it is an outright lie, as demonstrated by the torrent of one-sided emails, social media content, and countless one-sided lectures in union meetings about why we should accept the deal, while describing any counter-argument as misinformation. So Mullaly sells out workers and lies to us, to the media, and to the wider community in the process. Ticking all these boxes, he would make a great Labour Party politician one day. We should not view the calcified Branch Council as the key to the future of public education, but rather the rank-and-file union members everywhere who know better. The role of socialists in schools. Socialists in Schools, a campaign group within the union, played a decisive role in activating more radical union members to build and win the No campaign. We produced materials for AEU members to take to their schools to educate others about why it's right to have high expectations and maintain our demands, and why the only way to win was through a militant industrial campaign. Before the 24 March strike, our strike zine tackled a series of questions we thought needed addressing, from do strikes work for the many members who had no experience striking due to the union's inaction for many years, to can the government afford to pay us, given the media's beat up about the state government being broke. Later in the campaign, we responded to common arguments and fear-mongering from union leaders against further strike action and voting no in our campaign FAQ, such as will we be starting from scratch if we vote no, and are we going to be forced into arbitration, and do we need to accept a deal so we don't have to risk bargaining with the Liberals or One Nation following a state election. When calling through the hundreds of school staff who left their details with the Vote No network, many said they had already printed these documents and distributed them at their school or used them to decorate their union notice boards. This material was extremely effective because the union's materials were deliberately unclear. Members had questions that the officials just would not hear out or answer adequately. In addition to speaking at regional and online briefings, officials visited many schools to spruik their offer. It was a joy to hear that at many of these sub-branch meetings, teachers and ES stood up to the officials and, at times, even walked out on them. One official went so far as to describe as feral a school in the eastern suburbs where a Socialists in Schools member helps to lead the sub-branch. Long live the feral schools. We are immensely proud that our materials found their way into countless staff rooms and helped frustrated union members everywhere stand up for themselves, knowing they were not alone. This is extremely important in a union that deliberately silos members and schools off from one another. Socialists in Schools hosted multiple meetings online and in person, with some between 70 and 150 union members. It's now an active campaign with dozens of impressive union militants. We have discussed a socialist approach to schooling and education, built our school sub-branches, faced off with the officials, produced vital social media content and resources for union activists, and fought for a set of politics in the union to counter the conservative, defeatist approach of the AEU leaders. Towards the end of the campaign, we received messages from dozens of union members giving us information about their school's vote. Before the official results were announced, we had collected voting data for nearly 200 school sub-branches. Many of these messages included anecdotes about how their schools fared, sharing surprise at how many at their school voted no, frustration at the lack of democracy in the union's process, and asking us for advice or disappointment in the result of their own school, but hoping for a better result overall. We thank everyone who sent us these messages and made connections during the campaign, and we urge everyone to stay in touch and get involved. Unlike the opaque leadership, we aim to share results from the no voting schools, both primary and secondary, metropolitan and regional, to give others the confidence to do the same. The next stage of the campaign. We are aware of the challenges ahead. The government says it is in no rush to resume negotiations with the union, and the latest union email indicates that the leadership will continue to waste our time and energy with an unnecessary survey, so they will have more of our opinions to ignore. We don't need a survey. We know the problems and their solutions. Socialists in Schools is calling for all the no voting schools and AEU members to pass motions demanding the union restart our industrial campaign and organise a strike for the first few weeks of Term 3. This is going to be an uphill battle, but our determined campaign has kept open a door the officials wanted to slam shut. We must be determined over the next few weeks to make the most out of this opportunity. Despite the many challenges ahead, it is worth reflecting and celebrating what a significant win our side has achieved. For decades, union officials in every industry have normalised conservative ideas in the workers' movement. Unions are not about organising our side of the class struggle, but are about service provision and individual protection. We can't have strikes because members are too passive and conservative. They also developed undemocratic structures to protect their own power and to ensure workers had no way to organise against them or challenge their arguments. The no vote in the AEU is an example of the opposite orientation. We did not passively accept the arguments of our union leaders. We educated ourselves, argued to others, and passed motions to express our opposition to the sellout. We went from office to office arguing with our co-workers, attended regional meetings, swapped numbers with activists at other schools, and forced discussion and debate everywhere to find critical members of the union to get active. We didn't accept bureaucratic and stifling meeting rules and used every avenue open to us to argue our points. We also didn't shy away from identifying as socialists, but connected our campaign to the question of capitalism, inequality, and other injustices like racism and war. All of this was to create a network of socialist union activists who could make coherent arguments across the school system. On an average day, the words you might use to describe working in education would include exhausting or demoralising. Today, it's exciting and inspiring. Teachers and ES should hold their heads up high for the historic stand we have taken and the example we have set for the rest of the union movement. Officials everywhere should be sweating, and unionists everywhere should take heart. Despite the lies and fear-mongering of our so-called representatives, when a clear lead is given, it's possible for socialists to win a wider audience, to reject the passivity and low horizons our union leaders set, and keep open the possibility of a fight for something more. Back to you, Jean.
Well, thank you so much, Andy. That makes things crystal clear, I believe, for a lot of our listeners. And now let's have a break.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM. Visit the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au/podcast to hear the most recent recording from each show, or 3cr.org.au/streaming to listen live.
Help 3CR raise funds by donating your containers. Every eligible drink container that you return to a Container Deposit Scheme recycling point earns 10 cents, which can really add up. 3CR is a donation partner for Victoria's Container Deposit Scheme. The scheme allows you to recycle selected aluminium, glass, or plastic containers and donate the funds earned to a not-for-profit organisation of your choice. Help us raise funds for the station. Search for Community Radio and choose 3CR next time you cash in your cans. Go to cdsvic.org.au for more information.
Well, we hope you're still with the dogs, and this is a special program dedicated to our teachers who have been on strike and who are thinking of another strike too. So let's hear a bit more about it, shall we, from Dale.
Thanks, Jean. This is an article from Red Flag by the Socialists in Schools and AEU members. Victorian teachers strike again. At 1:44 p.m. on the 21st of July, the news broke. Australian Education Union members had once again voted to reject a substandard offer put to us by the state Labor government and our union leaders. It was a brilliant move, even if at the time I was in class and not with my colleagues. Students eating their lunch wondered why I suddenly looked so thrilled. "The strike's on," I shouted, and they erupted into chanting, "Strike, strike, strike, strike." While we could all agree that another day off school was something to be excited about, the significance of the win goes far deeper. This was the second time that AEU members have been asked to vote on an offer that failed to address our key demands, and the second time members said, "No thanks, let's keep fighting." The strike later that week was an incredible display of resistance and solidarity, tens of thousands walking off the job for a second time this year. Given the AEU has called only one strike in the last 13 years, it represented a significant achievement. The strong vote in favour of rejecting the second agreement and fighting for more was not only a win against the industrial action averse union leadership, but also against the Labor government, which has continually undervalued our work and underestimated our resolve. The strong attendance at the rally was a testament to the commitment of teachers to win a better deal than last time. The second no vote wasn't a given, as there were some improvements on the previous offer. One of the most significant was halving of time teachers can be required to spend in meetings, from 80 to 40 hours per year, an important win for teachers' dignity and sanity. The other key improvement was the shifting of allowances for education support staff into their base pay. This means that we have now won an equal percentage pay rise for education support staff and teachers. This is significant, as allowances can be scrapped, but it is much harder to undo a pay rise. This gain acknowledges the crucial work of education support staff and means we are better placed to fight for more together in future campaigns. It also reflects the wonderful unity and solidarity within the union. The government and union leaders thought they could get away with ripping off one section of its workforce, but teachers and support staff stood together and refused to be divided against each other. These gains prove that the arguments our union leaders used to browbeat us into accepting the last offer were simply nonsense. They told us that we had to vote yes to the first deal because it was the best that we could get. They said the next offer could be worse if we voted no. If we rejected the first offer, they told us, it would be ripped up and the whole negotiation process would have to restart and then drag out for months. All now shown to be lies and fear-mongering by people who want school staff and students to suck up subpar conditions so they can claim victory and get a pat on the back from the government and perhaps pre-selection for the ALP one day. But despite the gains, there were still major problems with the offer. Some of the key ones were that the pay increase was still well below 35% over 3 years. The government had not agreed to fully fund the agreement so it could actually be implemented, and crucially, it did nothing to address workloads, class sizes, face-to-face teaching time, planning time. This would lock in the current crisis-level conditions being experienced by teachers and students in public schools for another 4 years. This is why it was so important that the activist group Socialists in Schools threw ourselves into campaigning for a no vote. It was a challenge, not least because the window for voting was very narrow. Voting links were sent out Friday night with a deadline of Tuesday afternoon. This allowed little time for teachers collectively to discuss the proposal or even read it and understand the changes. Nevertheless, Socialists in Schools immediately leapt into action. Members combed through the offer and identified errors and issues, produced social media content, engaged in online discussions, answered common misconceptions and questions, wrote email newsletters, contacted colleagues, shared Vote No explainers everywhere, and organised urgent sub-branch meetings for Monday where possible. It was a marvel to be part of such a cohered and determined group of socialists in their element. In the end, the second offer was voted down by a narrow margin of 48% to 51%. Participation in the vote was high, reflecting the widespread engagement by school staff in this campaign. In this context, a vote against a second improved offer, even by a small margin, is extremely significant. The rejection, importantly, means the union's planned strike for the 23rd of July would go ahead. The task then was to bring everyone together to make it as successful as possible. Because there was so little time to prepare and the membership was quite divided on the offer, there were worries and murmurs that the strike would be smaller than the first or not as well observed. On the other hand, at my school, like many others, more people had joined the union since the last action, so the potential for disruption was greater. More importantly, though, is that the general willingness of members to stand together as a union clearly held strong. On Thursday, the streets of Melbourne were overcome with impassioned educators in a sea of red, as were a number of regional centres. The wonderful tradition of each sub-branch school bringing their own banner gave an idea of the breadth of support. It was heartening to find schools nearby to your own, and possibly more so, the banners from schools and places you hadn't heard of. As usual, homemade placards and signs were on point, and chanting was loud and energetic. For the first time, socialists in schools marched together as a block, drawing in members and sub-branches that have taken part in or supported our No campaign. It was an energetic, defiant, and loud march. Dedication doesn't pay the rent, we chanted. Strike, strike for 35%. Socialists in Schools has been pushing for strikes not simply because school staff are entitled to better pay and conditions, but because stopping work and shutting schools is the key way we can pressure the government to actually do something about the crisis in public education. If we stay passive and accept whatever the government offers us, the state of our schools can continue to be ignored. Strike actions make it no longer the staff and students' problem, but society and the government's. The other reason we argue for strikes is that they are empowering, inspiring events. They give workers a taste of their own power and greater confidence in their cause. Standing in the middle of this rally, watching the beaming faces around you fill the streets with our numbers and the air with our voices, it is impossible to feel anything other than joyful and empowered. We are not greedy, inconsiderate, or lazy, as politicians, the media, and pundits like to suggest. We are fighting for something important. Our quality of life, that of our students, and that of public education in general. Brendan Laws, a high school teacher, member of Socialists in Schools, and Victorian Socialist candidate against Education Minister Ben Carroll, summed it up, telling Red Flag, "Our actions can disrupt the status quo. We are more powerful than we think. This lesson cannot be learned from books alone. Workers need to live it and feel it. This is why it mattered that socialists in schools activists did all they could to help defeat the second offer." The next day in the staff room, swapping stories about our strike day, my colleague commented, "I really needed that." They were speaking for tens of thousands of teachers as well as the millions of other workers watching. Socialists in schools will continue to agitate for more strikes and a better agreement that meets our demands. This campaign has surprised us many times, and the hope and determination of AEU members have been awe-inspiring. Whatever happens next, there is much to be proud of. It was summed up perfectly by a member of Socialists in Schools well before the results were announced, and we experienced our second historic strike and the jubilant determination on the streets. The era of doing what we're told is over. Regardless of the vote, resistance is the winner. Back to you, Jean.
Well, thank you very much, Dale. And of course, with this whole teacher strike, it's not just about money, although that is important because they are not paid nearly as much as the people in New South Wales. But money alone won't get them back to schools. There's other things that are involved. Let's hear from Andy, shall we?
Thanks, Jean. Victorian teachers are striking again. Money alone won't get them back to school. On Thursday, tens of thousands of Victorian public school teachers, principals and education support staff walked off the job in a 24-hour statewide strike. This means schools will not be operating as usual and union members will gather for a protest march in Melbourne CBD. This is the latest escalation in a dispute with the state government that has been running since mid-2025. In March, more than 35,000 school staff struck for the first time in 13 years, closing schools region by region over successive days. Talks over a new industrial agreement have continued in fits and starts since then. The government put forward an improved offer in May, then another in July, with members voting to reject it both times. Why are teachers rejecting a, quotation marks, generous offer? Union members only narrowly voted to reject the most recent offer. 48.8% wanted to accept it. On paper, the government's proposal looks hard to refuse. It includes pay rises of 28.3% to 32.4% over 4 years, which would take an experienced teacher's salary from roughly $118,000 to more than $151,000 by 2029. Required meeting hours would be halved from 80 hours to 40 hours per year. But the union argues the offer misses the point. Teachers, education support staff and principals report working around 12 hours of unpaid overtime a week. Class sizes remain uncapped and face-to-face teaching hours are unchanged. Shaving one meeting off the week doesn't significantly alter the administrative load. Planning, reporting, individual education plans for students with disabilities, documentation for increasing behavioural issues that teachers say is really driving them out the door. How does Victoria compare? Money is, of course, a key part of the dispute because Victoria has fallen behind other jurisdictions. Graduate teachers currently start on about $79,589, the lowest paid in the country, compared with about $90,000 in New South Wales and $96,180 in the Northern Territory. An experienced Victorian teacher earns roughly $118,063 versus about $130,000 in New South Wales. The proposed deal would close much of that gap on paper, but many teachers argue that pay parity means little if the job itself remains unsustainable. What the research says teachers actually need. Teachers most often cite high stress, unmanageable workloads, and poor work-life balance as key reasons for wanting to leave their jobs. A 2022 survey of nearly 2,500 teachers found only 41% intended to stay in the profession, with workload, well-being and status the dominant themes. Other studies have found Australian teachers work about 46.5 hours a week. This is well above the OECD average of 41 hours, despite a similar time spent actually teaching. The extra hours go largely on administrative work. This is why researchers argue policy changes must address these root causes rather than relying on pay alone. These problems are also found overseas. Our 2025 review of teacher recruitment and retention across four countries, including Australia, found the same four issues everywhere: pay, workload, stress, and status. Financial incentives do help recruitment, but only when large enough to offset a tough posting. Evidence on whether cutting workload improves retention is thinner, not because it doesn't matter, but because so few interventions have been properly evaluated. Research indicates teachers want to be trusted and respected for the complex work they do every day, not only by politicians, but also from school community members, the wider public, and the media. Despite Australian teachers rating their profession's public standing higher than counterparts in England or Sweden, Australian research shows media coverage that dismisses the complexity of the job, amounting to routine teacher bashing. Professional autonomy is one of the most important factors around teachers staying. Finland's trust model, where teachers are given the space to teach based on their professional judgment without standardised tests, school inspections or rankings, is often cited as evidence that more autonomy works. Here we go again. Short-term fixes alone are unlikely to make teachers safe and satisfied in their jobs. Teachers say they cannot sustain the workload or emotional toll. They want less admin, better wellbeing support, and a lift in professional status. Addressing workload, investing in real support for teachers, and elevating the status of the profession are complex. But this is what the research suggests is needed to reset the system. If we ignore these bigger issues, teachers are already flagging another strike is on the cards. Back to you, Jean.
Well, so many thanks, Andy. And it's not only in Australia that our students and our teachers in public education are unhappy. They are in some other parts of the world too. And we're going to hear about where they've taken action and actually got rid of an education minister. Over to Jeff.
Good afternoon, listeners. Today we're going to concentrate on the big story from India, where it proves the fact that public education can be taken very seriously indeed, and Indians certainly take their public education very seriously. So this article is by Farin Hussain, and it comes from the Asia Media Centre. From Roaches to Resignation, How India's Students Forced a Political Retreat. What began as an outrage over leaked medical entrance exams evolved into India's biggest youth protest movement in years. Fueled by memes, Instagram reels and weeks of demonstrations, the Cockroach Junta Party helped transform Gen Z frustration into a national political reckoning that ultimately forced Education Minister Dharmendra Pradhan to resign. As an aside, Modi's government, the BJP, which is heavily conservative and religious right-wing populist government, has been on the nose, having been in power for quite a long time, and the youth are sick and tired of the conservative nature of this government. We'll continue the article. The cheers began before the official announcement had finished circulating. At Delhi's Jantar Mantar, where students had spent 36 days sleeping under torp tarps through punishing heat, monsoon rain and humidity, word spread rapidly that Education Minister Dharmendra Pradhan had resigned. Protesters hugged strangers. Someone handed out Melody chocolates. Parents lifted their children onto their shoulders. Within minutes, hundreds of phones were in the air, recording a moment many had begun to wonder would never come. The resignation ended one of the most remarkable youth-led protest movements in India that had been witnessed in recent years, one that began with allegations of examination paper leaks and grew into a nationwide campaign that challenged Prime Minister Narendra Modi's government, dominated social media and ultimately forced one of the longest-serving ministers from office. Pradhan stepped down on July 25th after 36 days of demonstrations at Delhi's Jantar Mantar and protests across several Indian cities over examination paper leaks, the handling of the NEET, National Eligibility Come Entrance Test, controversy and the use of force against demonstrators. Hours later, senior BJP leader Prahlad Joshi was given additional charge of the Ministry of Education along with his existing cabinet responsibilities. Why the protests? The protests were triggered by the leak of a national medical entrance examination that affected about 2 million candidates, but the anger went beyond one test. Students described an examination system in which years of preparation could be undone by organised leaks, administrative failures and the prospect of retests. Every year, India's highly competitive entrance examinations determine the future of millions of young people. Admission to medical colleges, engineering institutions and government jobs often depends on a single examination. When allegations emerged that the country's largest medical entrance examination had been compromised, confidence in a system that shapes millions of lives began to unravel. The numbers alone illustrate the scale. More than 2.27 million students registered for NEET UG in 2026, while 2.2 million sat the original examination before a re-examination was ordered following allegations of a paper leak. The movement was organised by the Cockroach Junta Party, or CJP, founded by political communication strategists Abhijit Jepeki. It began as an online response to a remark comparing unemployed young people with cockroaches and quickly became a rallying point for students angry about paper leaks, unemployment and what they saw as a lack of accountability in public institutions. The CJP provided the mobilisation, the protest calls and the organisational centre. Gen Z gave the movement its tone. Students used Instagram reels, memes, edited film clips, parody campaign posters and mock political advertisements to respond to developments almost as they happened. Government statements were turned into meme templates. Television debates were clipped and mocked. Images of cockroaches wearing graduation caps appeared alongside jokes about examinations being leak-proof only after they had already leaked. The content was deliberately unserious in presentation, but not in purpose. Humour allowed students to discuss corruption, unemployment and public accountability in a language familiar to millions of young people who might never attend a political rally. AP described the movement's principal weapons as irreverent humour and memes, while Reuters reported that CJP amassed tens of millions of Instagram followers as the campaign grew. Some posts mocked Prime Minister Narendra Modi directly, an unusual feature in a political environment where criticism of the Prime Minister is often more restrained. Others targeted television channels viewed by protesters as sympathetic to the government. Police restrictions, political speeches and official assurances were all fed into the same online cycle of satire. The result was a protest that could move between Jantar Mantar and Instagram without changing its language. As the movement gathered momentum, parents began arriving with young children. Toddlers sat on their parents' shoulders waving flags. A three-year-old dressed as a doctor wandered through the crowd wearing a toy stethoscope. Another child came dressed as Mahatma Gandhi. For many families, the protests became something about something larger than one examination. "We're here because it's for the future of our children," Kanchan, who attended with her three-year-old son, told The Hindu. "If truth wins, we can tell our children that the protesting students suffered Lathi charge for you guys. The campaign soon moved beyond Delhi. Demonstrations and solidarity marches were reported in Mumbai, Bengaluru, Patna, Kolkata, Ranchi, Pune, and Thiruvananthapuram, among other cities. Protesters also gathered in Kota, India's best-known coaching centre, where the examination system shapes the lives of thousands of students every year. By then, the story had attracted and sustained international coverage. Reuters, the Associated Press, The Guardian, Al Jazeera and The Wall Street Journal reported on the protests, often focusing on their unusual combination of conventional street mobilisation and Gen Z internet culture. The movement was variously described as a major challenge to Modi's authority, a generational political shift and a rare example of online satire producing an immediate political outcome. Well before the largest police crackdown, the protests gained a prominent supporter in education reformer and climate activist Sonam Wangchuck. Wangchuck began an indefinite hunger strike on 28th of June in solidarity with Dipki's sit-in and the demand for Pradhan's resignation. His participation brought the movement attention beyond its young social media audience and drew support from educators, civil society figures and older Indians familiar with his work. As the fast continued, Wangchuck's health deteriorated. The Delhi High Court later allowed him to be moved from Safdarjung Hospital to Medanta Hospital in Gurugram. By 22nd of July, on the 25th day of his fast, he said he was prepared to end it if the government guaranteed that peaceful protesters would not face legal action. He ended the hunger strike after 26 days following written assurances and talks involving senior government figures. Wangchuck said the possibility of further violence was also a factor in his decision. His fast ended 2 days before Pradhan resigned. The government's public response intensified as protests grew. Modi released a rare selfie-style video on Instagram addressing students and parents directly. He acknowledged the seriousness of the paper leak crisis and spoke about measures to strengthen the examination system. He later posted another video thanking young people for their engagement and suggestions. The outreach drew large audiences, but it did not end the agitation. Protesters welcomed the recognition of the problem while continuing to insist that the administrative reform was not a substitute for political responsibility. Social media users also responded with criticism, satire, and demands that the education minister resign. The protests reached their most confrontational point on 20th of July, when thousands of demonstrators attempted to march towards Parliament. Police used barricades, tear gas and batons to stop the march. Reuters reported that the clashes injured scores of people and led to widespread detentions. Images of protesters being beaten or dragged away circulated rapidly online and added to the criticism of the government's response. CJP representatives alleged that the pellet guns had also been used. Delhi police denied the allegation, calling it false and saying pellet guns were not part of its arsenal. In the absence of independently verified evidence, the claim remains disputed and cannot be stated as fact. The political confrontation that then moved closer to the centre of government. On the 21st of July, Congress leader Rahul Gandhi, Priyanka Gandhi Vadra and other opposition leaders staged a protest near the Prime Minister's official residence under the slogan Chalo PM House. The leaders said the protest was in response to Delhi police's brutality on students. Gandhi was forcibly removed and detained, with images showing him with a nosebleed. Opposition parties also disrupted Parliament and demanded Pradhan's resignation, a debate on any examination failures and action over police response. The pressure was compounded by another paper leak case while protests were still underway. Veer Madho Singh Bhandara, Uttarakhand Technical University cancelled 2 third-year BTEC examinations after questions were allegedly circulated through the WhatsApp group before the tests. The paper setter, an assistant professor, was arrested. For protesters, the case strengthened their argument that leaks were not confined to NEET, but reflected a wider failure in the administration of public exams. Pradhan initially resisted calls to resign and defended the government's response. In his resignation letter, however, he said the issue concerned the futures of the country's youth and that he did not want the situation to cause further harm. His exit was widely seen as a rare concession by a government that has generally resisted demands for ministerial resignations under public pressure. Joshi Nauz takes charge of a ministry facing a crisis of confidence. The government has promised reforms to examination and administration and tougher action against organised paper leak networks, but the political damage will not be repaired by a change of minister alone. The protests succeeded because they combined several different forms of pressure. The CJP organised the campaign, Wanchuk gave it moral authority. Opposition parties carried it into Parliament. Police action widened public anger, but it was Gen Z that gave the movement its distinctive public identity. Its memes and reels were funny because they were meant to be shared. They were political because beneath the jokes was a serious demand that an examination system capable of determining the future of millions of young Indians should also be capable of earning their trust. That's the end of the article. And I think that's an interesting story. It's a really big lesson that Indians take education very seriously. I wonder if we and the teachers here will be listened to in such a way. Perhaps comedy memes are the way to go. With that, I'm going to pass you back to the headquarters. Cheerio.
Well, I think it's time for a quick break, but stay with us because the last part of our program is always the very best.
3CR programs provide information and analysis you won't hear in the mainstream.
Today we'll be looking at the legacy of the US war on Vietnam on Laos.
And as far as corporate capitalism is concerned, it is the worst political and economic system that you can have.
Our laws about jailing refugees and asylum seekers are so well crafted.
Sex is not irrelevant and we like who we are, but we don't have to be imprisoned by our gender.
Become a subscriber today. Call us on 9419 8377 or visit 3cr.org.au. 3CR, the voice of dissent.
Help us celebrate 50 years. Subscribe.
3CR. Well, we hope you're still listening to the Dogs program for our final section. The teachers and the students are unhappy and they've been on strike. But the schools that are perhaps the most affected by the difference in pay for teachers are the border schools. The schools up on the border where the teachers can get considerably more if they just pop over the Murray River into New South Wales. But that doesn't mean to say that a lot of teachers aren't still sticking it out on this side of the border and are doing a fabulous job. Let's hear about them, shall we?
Every week on the Dogs program, we have a special segment to show a different state school is a great school.
State schools are great schools.
School of the week. State school.
School
great
of the
school.
Week. Great state schools.
State schools.
Schools
school
are great
of the week.
Schools.
School for the week here on the Dogs program.
And this week's Great State School of the Week is Wodonga Senior Secondary College. Wodonga Senior Secondary College's mission is to empower our students with the skills and attributes to become successful global citizens. The college provides specialist educational programs for students from years 10 to 12. Wodonga Senior Secondary College offers the greatest choice of subjects, courses and specialisms for senior secondary education in Wodonga, enabling all students to choose their individual pathways for success. Our aim is to provide all students with the opportunity to maximise their personal and academic growth in a supportive environment, one specially designed to advance students in their later secondary years. Complementing this, the college acts as a hub provider of specialist studies to students in other regional schools. This partnership enables students from those schools to access studies that maximise their potential and future pathways also. Our Pathways program ensures every student is provided with personal counselling and careers information to assist in their transition from school to tertiary and further education, apprenticeships, traineeships and employment. In providing the widest range of academic and VET courses in regional Victoria, our students are exposed to an adult work and study environment and an extensive offering of sport, music, drama, arts and extracurricular activities. With the establishment of a highly successful flexible learning centre, Wodonga Senior Secondary College now caters for the educational needs of all young people in the Wodonga community. And now some numbers from the My School website. There are currently 1,348 students at the school and the ICSEA value 943, which is below average. That means 6% of students are sitting in the top 25% of socio-educational advantage, 15% in the second quartile, 28% in the third quartile, which is below 50% socio-educational advantage, and the lowest quartile of SEA, 51% of students. There are 13% Indigenous students, and 9% of students have a language background other than English. And for the funding, from the Australian government, recurrent funding of $7.1 million, and from the state government, $26.9 million. $350,000 from fees, charges and parent contributions and other private sources at $481,000. And that works out to $27,913 per student. The total capital expenditure in the last 3 years, about $7.5 million. Back to you, Jean.
Congratulations to Wodonga Senior College. That's our great state school, and all our state schools are great schools, of course. But as we record, we understand that at 10:30 on the 4th of August, there will be another rally, another strike at Parliament House in Bourke Street and all around there, of course, because there's thousands and thousands are out on the street on these strike days. But it's now my turn to thank our wonderful producer, Dale and Andy. Thank you very much, Annie McLaughlin from Solidarity Breakfast, and everybody else who puts this together, and to congratulate the teachers and tell them that we're behind them all the way for their great work in our public system, and we want them to be properly paid and looked after. And if you want to find out more about us, you can go to our website at www.adogs.info. But from all of us here at 3CR, it's bye for now.
Saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he. In Salt Lake City, Joe says I, him standing by my bed. They framed you on a murder charge, says Joe, but I'm dead. Says Joe, but I'm dead. The copper bosses killed you, Joe. They shot you, Joe, says I. Takes more than guns to kill a man, says Joe, I didn't die, says Joe, I didn't die. And standing there as big as life and smiling with his eyes, says Joe, what they can never kill, went on to organize, went on to organize. From San Diego up to Maine, in every mine and mill, where workers strike and organize, it's there you'll find your hill. It's there you'll find your hill. I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he.
In 2026, 3CR is celebrating 50 years on air.
Over five decades, we've been home to hundreds of shows, thousands of broadcasters and guests, and hundreds of thousands of listeners.
This February, we're aiming for 1,000 subscribers.
It's just $40 concession, $80 full.
Help us celebrate 50 years. Subscribe.
Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We rely on the financial support of listeners like yourself to keep going. Will you help 3CR by becoming a regular donor today? Together, we can keep independent voices on air. Go to 3cr.org.au and thanks for your support.